DR Power Equipment is the industry leader in field and brush mowers. Their full line of machines are designed to clear acres of tough weeds, woody brush, and saplings up to 3 inches thick, hour after hour, year after year. Just one mow, and you'll agree nothing stops at DR. Visit drpower.com to learn more and shop the sale today.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
It looks like Oasis is getting back together. We will get to that in a while. We will get to that through the good offices of Valerie Cox, journalist and author, Zara King, Virgin Media News correspondent, and Matt Cooper. I was going to say of this parish, but of a locally affiliated parish, I think is the technical term, host of The Last Word, and also host of the Path to Power podcast, which you're taking on the road, Matt.
Live. Yes.
You're going to be in the Olympia and the
Cork Opera House.
They have one of them in Cork, have they?
Oh, be very careful, Anton. I mean, it'd be bad enough bringing Ivan Yates down to Cork and the potential for him to be saying inflammatory and incendiary things about my home city. But yes, we have a wonderful opera house in the middle of Cork city centre, which we'll be in.
Before I get abused, yeah. I should say I have been in it. It's lovely. It was only a joke. I take it all back.
Yeah, okay. Friday the 13th of September for that, and in the Olympia on Dame Street on Wednesday the 11th of September. So we'll have guests in both places as well as having our sort of usual podcast chat.
And you're going to be responsible for reining in Ivan Yates in front of a live crowd.
I know, I'm actually quite worried about that.
We wish you the best luck. Tickets are where?
Ticketmaster for the Olympia and the Cork Opera House website for the Cork event.
Well, we appreciate you coming in this morning, as we do to Valerie and Zara. We should look through the news, making the papers and online this morning. We'll start with Stephen Donnelly's intent to ban social media for everybody under the age of 16, or at least to greatly restrict it for everybody under the age of 16. This has been reported in the Sunday Times. Zara, before we get into the details of what it is that he wants to do, can you explain to me how this is the bailiwick of the Minister for Health?
I don't know. I mean, I know that Stephen Donnelly has spoken very publicly about this on many occasions. I'm not exactly sure why it is that he has taken it upon him. I think, look, interestingly, I would say it's probably more linked to the idea of the impact it's having on mental health for children. And he says today in the paper that the crisis requires a major response, including restricting access and parental controls on home broadband. Cigarette-style warnings, he's describing them as. Look, it's interesting. I think when you look at the situation for kids in schools, ultimately, it seems a little bit like closing the stable door after the horse has bolted. I mean, you can probably imagine that a lot of kids will want to use social media, TikTok and the likes, and they're not going to necessarily put in their exact date of birth. I'm sure they're not doing that right now. But between Stephen Donnelly and Norma Foley, it seems to be a Fianna Fáil strategy for sure to put a halt to social media usage. I just don't know how successful it's going to be. I mean, it's interesting. I did a story recently on this and I spoke to children in primary school about how they felt about having their phones. And one little girl said to me that she finds it really stressful to actually have the phone, that actually she's asking her mum all the time to check it. She's handing the phone over to her mum and saying, oh, actually, can you just check that and make sure that everything is okay? And I said to her, well, why do you have it then if you find it really stressful? And she said, well, I have to have it because all my friends in the class have it. And they come in and they tell me all the things they've seen on TikTok, or we're going to do a dance together. And how can I do it if I don't have it? But then in the same breath, she lives in fear of that idea of stranger danger, that idea of somebody reaching out to her and how will she handle it if it happens? So it's interesting in that I'd say a lot of kids would probably appreciate not feeling the social pressure to be on social media. But at the same time, I think it's going to be very difficult to actually make a real change here.
Yeah, and as I understand it, the Norma Foley plans kick in this Monday, isn't it? Any school that wants to participate, if you are in school on Monday, you will be handed a Ziploc bag and told stick the phone in that.
Yeah, but I mean, I was in school like 20 years ago and there was a mobile phone ban allegedly back then as well. So I don't know how it's changed.
The zip bag thing is happening in a lot of schools at present. Norma Foley is only telling schools to do what they're already doing. My own youngest son is starting fifth year in secondary school tomorrow. But for the last couple of years, they hand over their phone or they put it in the Ziploc bag and they put it in the locker. And the trick is to make sure that it's not accessed during school breaks and that it's wait until outside until people leave the school premises before they get onto it again. Now, actually, Norma Foley was on The Last Word during the week where she brought this up, and I brought it up briefly with her, and we came back to it because lots of people were pointing out the flaws. Apparently, a lot of the kids use their old phones, which they put into the Ziploc.
They've got burner phones.
Burner phones, effectively, right? Okay. So they throw their burner phone into the locker and they keep their own one in their bag and they're slipping out to the toilet to have a look at it and whatever.
But my pals were doing that in school 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Genuinely.
But then it was Nokia. You know, what were they going to do? Yeah, it was only like, SMS.
Yeah, but then, you had a broken phone that your mom or dad had left lying about and that was the one you handed in, and then you kept your 3210 on you with your cool ringtone.
So then the issue that came up with a lot of some listeners pointed out, with the teachers and the staff in the schools also put their phones into, because when you look at it, I mean, I look at myself, one of the worst moments for me is 9 o'clock every Monday morning. A message comes up on my phone to tell me about how much I've looked at my phone for the past week. Yeah. And every week I'm embarrassed when I look at it and I swear that I'm going to put my phone aside. And then I look the following Monday morning and I've been as bad or even worse than I had been.
Yeah, but I think, you know, that's not really that accurate, because I used to be horrified by that. And then I'd realise, well, I'm using my phone for work as well. I'm doing some research on the go. Yeah,
you can make any excuse for being on your phone too much, Valerie. And the distraction it causes, and I've become painfully aware of this and the distraction. Even I think yesterday morning, I'm working and writing a book at the moment and I had set aside and I kept trying to force myself. Every time there was a little ping of an alert coming through in the mobile phone, I just literally had to take the phone and place it in a different room just to get it away from me. And it's not just children. Adults have become slaves to their mobile phones as well. And I think it is a mental health issue.
If it is something that is the norm for adults, and it is going to be the norm as far as we can see into the future, what's the logic in saying to 15-year-old, 14-year-old, 16-year-old kids, you cannot do what you see adults doing when 2 years they're going to be adults?
And can you imagine trying to take the phones off the secondary school children? Can you imagine 17 and 18-year-olds being told that you... But I can also see the logic in what Stephen Donnelly is saying as well. We don't allow the children to drink in school. We don't allow them to smoke. So why allow them to use mobile phones? And up to the age of 18, you were still a child.
But I think, as you said, Matt, the schools are already ahead of the minister because they've been using these Ziploc bags, which I know some kids obviously in school, and you know, it's working very, very well, and they all succumb to it and they don't feel the phones are being just taken off them. It's a question of putting your phone away till the end of the school day, and that's very important. But I think the idea of banning social media for under 16s is quite ridiculous. That is never going to happen. And I think, you know, social media, when I was in school, we didn't even have mobile phones. My God, we were lucky to have landlines at home at that stage. But we've just got to embrace it. I mean, it is part of Ireland today, as part of the world today, and we just have to learn how to use it.
Because I mean, and okay, I think there's sincerity in what Stephen Donnelly and Norma Foley are saying, although it's also a useful distraction. I mean, as again a lot of listeners to The Last Word were pointing out in relation to the schools, there's major issues at the moment about having enough teachers to be teaching in classes, and this is a nice distraction that we're all talking about. But yet I do think there's a sincerity there, and I do think, you know, we don't allow children to drink. We don't allow them to drink at home or drink when they're out. Now, they do it, but we try and put curbs on it and manage it because we know it's
Well, this is exactly the point that Stephen Donnelly is making, Valerie, in the piece in the Sunday Times. He says, social media companies say, we can't do that. It's too complicated, this being restricting access for under 16s. He says, can you imagine if alcohol companies or cigarette companies said the same thing? You would just say, well, then we'll take your product off the market. The problem is they're not safe, so I would be taking a very hard line with the social media companies. So whatever about having a phone and being able to WhatsApp and group chat with your friends, access to TikTok, access to Twitter, access to Facebook, access to Instagram, what's to stop the social media companies putting in a real age ban?
There's nothing. I mean, you can have a parental control based around your internet supplier in your home even, you know. So, I mean, I think parents have to become far more savvy in this regard. But I actually think, you know, we're seeing this as a great big bad thing. Yeah, it's ridiculous to put it into the same category as cigarettes or drugs or drink or anything like that. It's quite different. And you've also got to remember that a number of schools up to now have actually been encouraging kids to do research on their phones as well. So, you know, it's not...
But hang on for a minute, separate out the two. The phones is one thing, the social media is the other. We know from the tech giants, they have said directly in the case of Elon Musk, and it has been revealed in the Facebook files, that what they do is they have an algorithm that finds the stuff that offends and irritates and annoys and inflames, and they feed you more of it, because the more divided you are and the more angry you are, the more you will doom scroll.
And they do it deliberately to children. They do it deliberately to children. This has also been actually part of congressional hearings in the United States, and there have been more evidence of that in recent times. One of the issues perhaps is the whole thing, and I think, Zara, you referred to it about kids maybe putting in false birth dates or whatever and stuff to get on the social media. And just
the way
fake ID to get drink has been through the generations. However, you know, we do have, everyone is assigned a PPS number from birth. You know, there's a question of actually doing some arrangement with data protection in mind, but also insisting that you can't actually get an account unless you actually provide your PPS number. That also prevents the anonymity under which some social media warriors actually operate for very nefarious means.
Yeah, but 16 is almost too old. They've almost lost them at that stage. Kids now are using mobile phones at such a young age. I mean, they've grown up with it and they're savvy, so savvy about doing it. I mean, I tell you, I have one of my grandchildren. I was going to order something one day online and he says, "Here, I'll do it." Did it. And then he looks at me and he says, I'm looking here at the websites you've been browsing. He is 7 years old.
And Valerie, what sort of websites are you browsing?
What was the list?
There are perfectly normal shopping sites and things. But the point about it is they are growing up tech savvy.
Well,
we certainly weren't.
I would argue they're savvy when it comes to logistics, but are they savvy when it comes to literacy in a digital space?
Great point.
Because I think that, yes, they can get online and they can place orders and they can do all those logistical things, but do they understand the consequences of the content that they're consuming? And that's what I would have the greatest concern about. And we had this discussion on the Group Chat podcast a couple of weeks back, where we were talking about the fact that children, teenagers, they're watching things that are aspirational online and they're seeing these lifestyles that, you know, in so many ways are unattainable or unrealistic, you know. And, you know, they're looking at people who, you know, appear to have a very glamorous lifestyle and existence. It's what the Criminal Assets Bureau would call wealth without means, where they're having these designer handbags and all these wonderful things. And you're looking at it going, well, actually, how are these people sort of funding these lifestyles and how is this actually happening? And even on that level, it's toxic for kids. And even, you know, when we look at filters and body image and all of the understanding, like everything is so glossy and so, you know,
but even more serious than that, I mean, mobile phones, social media is being used so much in the world of bullying and, you know, potential suicidal ideation and all of that. And I mean, we've seen social media mentioned in so many court cases, if you like, and investigations and so on, as being a very, very negative influence on young children, where, you know, you're not part of the gang, so we'll exclude you. And they have all of these WhatsApp groups and all the rest of it, and we're not letting you into this. I mean, it has potential for great danger there.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because a text just came in from a teacher to say it's the phone usage outside school that generating all the problems. Schools are picking up the pieces of what's being published on social media. It's creating enormous problems. I spend hours each week trying to deal with distraught children instead of teaching. I'm in a primary school. They're on Snapchat, Instagram, etc. from fourth class. It's an absolute mess. Parents are terrified of their child being, quotes, left out, and therefore they allow them on social minimum when they are on social media when they are below the medium age, minimum age, and the schools end up picking up the pieces. Anton, my granddaughter's school in Dundalk have incorporated the students' smartphones into the educational progress process, making them essential and to be left with the student as they are part of the school day. This should never have happened in lieu of the school providing tablets for this work. Also, homework and other essential information is issued via the phone. Another, Anton, the phones are destroying children's self-esteem and driving anxiety. Any chance you would stop knocking attempts to reduce phone use for kids and trying to give solutions to help instead?
Sorry, Anton, there's a couple of interesting things arising out of that as well, that from those text messages coming in. One is in relation to, during COVID, some of the schools really used technology very well. They used phones and iPads to keep the kids connected and to do classes. So there can be positives in relation to this. But there also is the issue that For some parents, I mean, like, a smartphone is an expensive thing to own and to operate. And parents themselves sometimes find them expensive. Suddenly having children looking for phones that cost at least hundreds of euros, often a lot more. And if you have a situation where a parent doesn't want to or can't afford to, and then suddenly the class gets based around actually doing your class performance, that's very unfair on those children and those parents. Mm. That's exclusionary.
Yeah.
Can I ask what we think the chances are of Donnelly getting anywhere with this?
Absolutely not. I mean, I think if he brings in a series of suggestions, people are more likely to take to it.
But what he's saying is he wants to take on the tech giants. He wants to sit down opposite Elon Musk and say, all right, Elon, you have to have a real age verification system for the sub-16s. What are his chances?
I mean, I don't think his chances are very good in that. But, you know, there's no harm in him coming forward with this. And the other thing is he's probably afraid of his life to annoy the tech giants, you know, who've contributed so much to the Irish economy. We've got so many of them operating from here, so many jobs involved, and he probably doesn't want to annoy them. But again, I mean, does his voice even matter to the tech giants? I don't think so.
Well, I think Simon Harris has already said he wants to meet Elon Musk to discuss all of this. Fair chance of that happening.
I just think it's an interesting conversation we're having in the era of a TikTok Taoiseach that we're talking about banning social media, because, you know, these young people that we're talking about are the very people that Simon Harris wants to vote for him eventually. So I don't know how he's going to feel about banning social media.
Well, it's interesting. The story is juxtaposed with questions about social media for adults as well, because there is a lot of coverage of Helen McEntee's hate speech ban, which to some extent was aimed to address the kind of dialogue and discourse that occurs on social media. We are told it is stone dead and there isn't a chance of it ever getting passed. And there is the news that Joe Brawley has been attempting to create a prosecution of Conor McGregor. There's a sentence I never thought I'd say.
Yeah, so this is Debbie McCann in the Irish Mail on Sunday today saying Gardaí are investigating a detailed report filed by sports pundit and barrister Joe Brawley after MMA fighter Conor McGregor told his millions of social media followers to evaporate property earmarked for asylum accommodation. This is Joe Brawley speaking on his podcast with Dion Fanning, basically saying that he'd reported McGregor to Gardaí after he wrote the inflammatory post in the immediate aftermath of last year's riots in the capital. Joe Brawley said he met with senior Gardaí on two occasions, but added nothing has come of this. Now, in response to queries from the Mail on Sunday, Gardaí said the force does not comment on named individuals, nor does Gardaí confirm or deny whether any individual or group of individuals are under criminal investigation. So it's kind of a story and a non-story all in the one go.
But it's very interesting that the double page spread in the Irish Mail on Sunday, which does, as you've already referenced, Helen McEntee and the hate speech bill. And I think it's very disappointing that there's clearly a need. When you read through the piece, you actually see the existing legislation that we have is not fit for purpose when it comes to dealing with hate speech and hate crime, which we have enormous issues with at present, where you have it actively encouraged by the likes of Elon Musk on X or Twitter or whatever you want to actually call it. And unfortunately, there are some politicians and government parties who should have known better, who have actually caved in to the extremists who organised the campaign against the hate speech legislation. This was agreed by a vast majority of the Dáil. It should be signed into law, should have finished going its way through. Suddenly they're all going, the likes of Willie O'Dea said, it's woke legislation. You know, there's this thing at the moment, there's this sort of slur that is attempted to be thrown at people. Oh, you're woke. You know, the definition of woke is aware, especially of problems such as racism and inequality social. So if that means woke, you know, I'd be happy to be called woke. And anyone who wants to start throwing this stuff against people who are broadcasters, who are journalists, or people involved, right, that you're all woke, yeah, bring it on. We're
woke. Criticism has gone beyond woke, Matt. There has been, I mean, Michael McDougall was highly critical of it in terms of the specificity and the nature of the wording. Charlie Flanagan likewise said that it was attempting more than could be achieved. There have been a number of senior politicians who have described it effectively as creating
cowardice, giving in to the right-wing mob, giving in to the types who do the things like burning down refugee centres.
You can't legally burn down a refugee centre under existing legislation. You can be prosecuted for that right now.
No,
today.
We don't need to hate these people. It's a slight misinterpretation of what I said there. It's the people who are encouraging that type of behaviour, usually the cowards who send out others to do it on their behalf, who are using social media to stir up hatred against others.
And again, people say there is an incitement to hatred legislation already there under which...
Which, if you read through that piece, you'll see it actually is not fit for purpose. It needs to be updated. It needs to be improved. That's what the hate speech bill, maybe there are its own flaws with that. Maybe it needs to be toughened and strengthened a little bit again.
It is an offence to communicate threatening, abusive or insulting material that is intended or likely to stir up hatred against a group of people based on their race, colour, nationality, religion, ethnic or national origins, membership of the travelling community or sexual orientation. Surely that covers a lot of what we're talking.
It does, but does it cover the means by which it is done in the social media era?
Well, the Gardaí are saying that the threshold to prosecute someone under the current act is so high that this is why we need this
That's
new
the key
act.
Issue, isn't it? It's implementation. Yeah.
The implementation is very, very difficult. But I mean, if you look at some of the tweets there that Joe Brawley is talking about, I mean, one of them in particular, do not let any Irish property be took over, his words, unannounced, evaporate said property. It is a war. I mean, that to me is terribly serious. And yet...
On the night of the Dublin riots, you reap what you sow. Then we are not backing down. We're only warming up. We are not losing any more of our women and children to sick and twisted people who should not even be in Ireland in the first place.
Just to be positive, there's a report in the Sunday Times today as well by John Mooney about Justin Barrett from the National Party down at Bail na Blav with a small group that they were streaming an event he did during the week. This is Justin Barrett doing more cosplay, you know, because he's now putting on the sort of the paraphernalia of the right wing of the 1930s. And he's about as much credibility as if he was wearing a Darth Vader suit for cosplaying Star Wars. Actually, Barry, that's a wrong analogy because he's way too short to be a Darth Vader. But the problem is that you have these guys who have been amplified for the speech. I'm encouraged, though, that the majority of people, nobody votes for Justin Barrett. Whenever he puts himself forward, he gets very, very small number of votes and similar type of figures. And I would be hopeful that, particularly when it comes to the general election, that people will reject this type of stuff. And I will say about Justin Barrett as well. He's engaged in this anti-foreigner behaviour. He's done so for over a decade. I really regret once we did allow him onto The Last Word, and I regret a couple of guests that we've had on the last decade at this time when we were supposed to be, you know, hearing every voice. And sometimes there are minority voices that we don't actually need to hear from. But I wonder if Justin Barrett was to fall ill, or if, you know, if he was driving back from Bain LeBlanc, thankfully he wasn't involved in any accident, would he reject the foreign nurses and doctors who might treat him in a hospital? I was in a hospital earlier this week. Two foreign nurses treated me, one foreign doctor, very happy to be able to go there and to have these people to be able to look after me. And I think all of these people who are engaged in this horrible, nasty, anti-foreign behaviour that's going on and racist behaviour and using social media to do so need to be called out for their ridiculousness as well.
Texts say the discussion about social media and the tech giants should also include the ethics of their business model. A significant part of it is about advertising and manipulating people into buying products and services that they don't actually need. Look at young children wanting skincare creams. This is all thanks to manipulation via social media. 53106, if you want to get in touch, or 087-1400-106. You may not have noticed, but Dublin Airport apparently has a passenger cap. More on that after the break.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
We have not one but two tickets to Coldplay. It is the last big gig of the summer, next Thursday, the 29th of August in Croke Park, and it's a sellout. So these are the last two that you could get your hands on. If you want to get your hands on them, tune in on air and online to News Talk from Monday morning, and we will share all the details.
On News Talk, conversation that counts. Make a good morning great for your business by monitoring your energy usage with Electric Ireland's Wattrix tool, making your business smarter.
Guaranteed Irish celebrates 50 years as the national symbol of trust. But what does Guaranteed Irish actually guarantee? For Home Hunter Report, it means looking for your dream home with confidence. Whether you're a first-time buyer or seasoned investor, Home Hunter Report is your trusted partner and Ireland's leading property research tool, saving customers thousands of hours each year. Visit homehunterreport.ie today and start your journey to the perfect home. and look out for the G. Guaranteed Irish. Altogether better.
Because your health means everything, VHI gives you access to a wide range of clinical services. Join VHI today to get access to dermatology, health screening, hospital at home, and much more. It's another way we're here for the whole you, with the whole of us. Search VHI to join today. VHI Healthcare DAC trading as VHI Healthcare is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland and is tied to VHI Insurance DAC for health insurance in Ireland.
Virgin Media customers make the right call with exclusive offers on mobile. Like our unlimited multi-SIM plan for just €15 a month per person. And enjoy 99% coverage on a 30-day contract. Switch in-store or at virginmedia.ie. Virgin Media, it's playtime.
Customer unlimited multi-SIM €15 per person while Virgin Media broadband and or TV is active. Applies to 2 to 6 mobile subscriptions. For T's and C's, see virginmobile.ie.
Harvey Norman, your home appliance specialists. Save money on your energy bills with the A-rated energy-saving Whirlpool 11kg washing machine for $639. Or keep your clothes feeling fresh for up to 6 hours with Fresh Care Plus on the Whirlpool 9kg heat pump tumble dryer for $739. Buy both for $1378 and receive a €100 Harvey Norman gift card. And with interest-free finance terms available and our best prices guaranteed, why shop anywhere else? Harvey Norman, your home appliance specialists.
The Anton Savage Show. This is News Talk. News Talk's Summer Cash Machine.
Well, it was a big August for Victor. Victor was in the office. We called him. He knew the cash amount and he won the money. He won a huge amount of money, 150 grand. Good news is, Cash Machine has been reloaded. In fact, it's been reloaded with even more money. €200,000 up for grabs. It's a guaranteed winner on Friday. Somebody's walking away with it. Taking part is easy. We give you an amount, you take a note of it, you enter, and if we call you and you give us the right number, you win the cash. Cash Machine one amount is an easy one to remember. €200,000 exactly. So you text the word play to 57557. That's 57557. It'll cost you €2.50 plus your standard message rate to play. You have to be over 18. You're playing across the Go Loud network of stations. Full terms are on the website, newstalk.com. Get your entry in by 3 p.m. on Friday, and then the Cash Machine will randomly pick one entry, and it could be you getting called during Sean's show. Answer within 5 rings. Tell us the prize amount, and you could walk away with €200,000 exactly. If you want to get in touch with the show, 53106, that'll cost you 30 cents, or you can get us 087 1400 106 for free and for nothing on WhatsApp. It is legal, it is a legal requirement, I think, at this stage, that every weekend there must be coverage of the Dublin Airport cap, and it is false to the Business Post to do it this weekend. Massive dent. Airport cap will cost Ireland €500 million next year. Last year, last week, we had Michael O'Leary calling for the cap to be lifted. This week, it's Kenny Jacobs, the DAA boss's turn to ask for the cap to be lifted. There's a fair campaign to achieve this, Valerie, isn't there?
Yeah, there is, absolutely. And it makes an awful lot of sense because if it's not lifted, they say that we're going to have all of these losses, 500 million next year. But, you know, if you look at it even a bit closer, the flights that we're likely to lose are going to be transatlantic flights, you know, great big aircraft, bring in so many people. And this weekend, for example, if we just look at the matches, we had 40,000 Americans coming in, which seems like an extraordinary number. Now, if we're not going to change the cap, then what's going to happen next is going to be these numbers are just not going to be able to plan. They're not going to be able to book in advance and they're going to have to go somewhere else. I mean, the only alternative is to develop another airport, open up Knock, make Knock a much bigger one. But you still have to get to Dublin because, you know, most people in the end want to go to the capital and that's where most flights are from. So, you know, it's a very, very difficult one and we are going to lose money if we can't change the cap. But then you've got all of the other interests involved as well. And, you know, you've got Air Rianta, but then you've got all the people living around the airport, miles and miles away, don't want flights going overnight. You know, where do you draw the line and whose side do you come down on? It's a very difficult decision.
Well, the Business Post is reporting that less than 3% of requests from some of the big US carriers to increase the amount of slots that they have actually been accepted. So yeah. they talk about United and JetBlue. So JetBlue has launched this new transatlantic. They've requested 144 new slots for the upcoming winter. United Airlines has asked for an additional 74. And neither carrier has received any of the new slots they requested, according to the report published by slot management company Airport Coordination Limited. That costs us money, doesn't it?
It does. So if you have that on the front page of the Business Post, if you flip over to the back page, Anton, you'll see I've given nearly the whole page to writing about this. Because as Valerie mentioned, I was at the American football match yesterday, the college's American football game, and was involved in a couple of events in previous days around it. If you go around, just on a broader context, we talk an awful lot about, for example, being able to go on our holidays, flights out of the airports. We talk about people coming home at Christmas, whether they'll be able to get flights. But actually, tourism depends on flights into the country. About 90% of the tourism into Ireland comes via flights. So this idea that the flights will come via Shannon and Cork instead in Dublin doesn't actually stack up. The airlines don't want to go there. We might wish that they would. They want to go to Dublin. But if you look around Dublin in recent times, we're here in Marconi House in Dublin city centre. I'm here every day, Monday to Friday. The nature of the city centre has changed quite dramatically. You can see, obviously, that the majority of people walking around are tourists. That's at this time of year. I'm talking to restaurateurs, and I'm interested you have Duncan McGuire coming on later. I know Duncan, we kids crossing over in school together, and his institution as a restaurant is one of a whole number of restaurants in this area within literally a 3 to 4 minute walk of Marconi House, closing at a time when there are plenty of tourists in town. What happens when these tourists are not coming in September, October? This is an act of self-sabotage if we start limiting the ability of Dublin Airport to bring people into the country. It is thoughtless thinking.
Can I just ask on that, Matt? Because if it were that we were reducing the numbers, I could see that. But the reality is what we are saying is Dublin Airport will continue, if the cap remains in place, if it will continue to have as many passengers coming through it as it has ever had. We are still going to make a fortune out of tourism. Sure, there may be a restriction on the total absolute possible numbers, but you do, as Valerie pointed out, have to balance that with the impact on the people who live around the airport and the traffic management impact on the M50 and M1.
Well, the traffic management, as it happens now, about, and Michael O'Leary's figures, as I quote in this, he's suggesting back when the limit was put in 2007, only 5% of people going to and from the airport use public transport. It's now 25%. If you look at the numbers and do a calculation, it means that it's more or less the same numbers who are travelling by car to the airport now as were back when the limit was put in. Planning permission was given for the second runway, and the implication of that was that 60 million passengers could go through Dublin Airport. And so that just shows there's no joined up thinking in relation to this. There's also an issue that this is a proxy campaign by the Green Party for environmental reasons to try and limit carbon emissions. Now, there's good reasons behind that. The reality, however, is that that needs to be a global issue in relation to, because Willie Walsh, who is the head of the global aviation industry, has pointed out that between now and 2050, we're going to double the number of people globally who are flying. So we could be handicapping ourselves here in Ireland by putting restrictions on flight while the rest of the world just gets on with having more and more flights.
Okay, if you have been dedicating all this intellectual capital to this, Matt, explain one bit of this that I don't understand. It's an issue, far as I get it, on board Planola. I think it's on board Planola rather than Fingal that it's now with. Surely that means that Kenny Jacobs and Michael O'Leary could both just stay quiet, file whatever it is that they want with the planning system.
And they've also, Aer Lingus and Ryanair have also taken legal actions in relation to this, because our planning system could take years to actually deal with this. This could take
so this is all an exercise in trying to keep pressure on the planners.
Yeah. But no, it's not. It's actually, you could actually have government intervention in this in relation to the national interest in relation to this. And this is going to be a big political issue. One of the stories that the newspapers concentrate on today is the Greens are now been literally pushed a little bit aside in relation to the residential tax for farmland and whatever. And the Greens are furious about what Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil plan to do. Nothing compared to what I predict might be the big row coming up around election time is that the government will act in relation to Dublin Airport, and it could force the Greens to walk out of government. But the Greens have been slightly disingenuous in that they're saying, oh, it's all about a planning issue and we can't interfere with planning. Eamon Ryan has made comments about LNG. He's made comments about the Metrolink going to Dublin Airport. When it suits the Greens, they're in favour of certain interventions and encouragements in the planning process.
About planning ideology and policy.
But basically, there is an environmental issue which has been hidden behind this whole thing about the planning for road access.
Valerie, somebody's on your side. Please use Cork. They're not going all the way to Knock. But please use Cork and Shannon more. Keep the cap. I'm sick of trying to traverse Dublin traffic and airport. Surely one of the things that Ryanair proved is that if you get within about 3 hours of where you want to go, it's close enough and you can get a bus. Shannon is in within 3 hours of Dublin. Why can that not solve some of our problem?
Well, that is a point, all right, isn't it? But in actual fact, if you ever go through Knock or Shannon Airport, it's such a joy. I mean, you just walk in from the car park, get on your plane, and when you come back, it's so nice. It really is. Or if you go up to Belfast, it's the same. I mean, Dublin Airport is a nightmare, particularly if you're flying Ryanair and you have to go down to terminal, whatever it is, and you've got to walk for miles. And, you know, it puts a terrible physical imposition on people, because you often see elderly people or people, you know, who need walking assistance and so on. And it's really awful compared with other airports where you automatically have little carts and buses and things whizzing you along. Frankfurt Airport, for example, if it's a long journey to your plane, you don't even get that in Dublin.
Sorry.
Yes, I know there's assistance for people with a disability, but I'm not talking about quite that much. I'm talking about people who are elderly or tired or whatever. We don't even look after them. So I don't know what we do with more passengers.
The airlines want to be in Dublin Airport. The airlines know where they get the business. Even Ryanair, which you mentioned, which is very happy to go to distant airports all over Europe, isn't encouraging flights into Cork or Shannon as an alternative to Dublin. That's where the business actually is, whether we like it or not. And indeed, Cork is projected to double its throughput of passengers over the next 3 to 5 years. Kenny Jacobs, the boss of DAA, is a Cork man. He's very committed to it. But you're not going to get, for example, transatlantic flights into Cork to replace the ones. And also what Lynn Embleton, the boss of Aer Lingus, has been saying in recent days as well, is that Dublin is a hub, often that an awful lot of passengers don't get out to go. They use it to transition to other flights, and that's valuable business.
A text saying, I have to disagree. Most people, well, most tourists, don't even like Dublin. They don't think much of it and think it's extremely dirty. I am told that at least 3 times a week. Text say, imagine if we had 2 international airports on the west side of the country, the Dublin cap wouldn't be a problem. And by the way, I should say, we were talking earlier on about the issue of social media for people under the age of 16 and mobile phones and therefore social media in schools. Interesting text from a secondary school teacher, and we've had a lot of response to that, but text from a secondary school teacher saying, I've had my fill of mixed messages from the department, the minister and individual schools. There is a national crisis with mobile phones. No one, parents included, really wants to address it. The majority of mental health issues we have are as a result of students spending far too much time on their phones. They also find it hard to have an actual conversation or exhibit regular social skills as a result of phone use. We now have students presenting to school who are addicted to their phones, as advised by psychologists. And at the same time, the department want the use of IT across all subjects. To say that there is rhetoric falling out of both sides of one mouth is an understatement. If you want to get in touch, 53106 or 087-1400-106. After the break, it has been a big week for the Democrats, the end of the Democrat National Convention. Interesting analysis that to some extent, and I'll take Matt's word that offends him so greatly, there's a lot of coverage that more or less says this was an exercise in being deeply annoyingly woke. We'll see which it was.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
If you or a loved one are in need of emergency care, you need to know you're going to be looked after quickly, professionally, and by a team of experts. BlackRock Health Emergency Departments offer fast, private, consultant-led emergency care in state-of-the-art surroundings at BlackRock Clinic and Hermitage Clinic, 7 days a week. Simply walk in or call 1-800-283-999 or visit blackrockhealth.com. BlackRock Health. Better together. Over 16s only. See website for opening hours.
Love luxury? Then check out Go Break's amazing selection of 4 and 5 star hotels across Ireland. Available on gobreaks.ie.
Go Break's Air. This is the network made for all, with offers made for all. Because all Air broadband customers get €10 off all Air mobile plans. That means all calls, texts and 5G data for just €9.99 a month for 12 months. Because this is Ireland's network. The network we all deserve. The network made for all. For more, go in store or visit air.ie. Air for all. For network substantiation, reward details and full terms, see air.ie/5G.
Polestar 2. Get behind the wheel and experience the electric performance of Polestar cars. Starting from 42995. Test drives available in Sandyford and now Malahide for a limited time. Book your test drive today at Polestar.com.
Get off to college ready with Harvey Norman, with great deals from all the biggest brands. Save €300 on the Samsung Galaxy Book 4 laptop with the Intel Core i5 processor, ensuring fast and efficient performance for your college projects. Was $899, now $599. Or save €50 on the Xiaomi Redmi Note 13 Pro SIM-free smartphone with a powerful camera system for ultra-clear picture quality. Was $399, now $349. Shop these deals and more in-store or online. Harvey Norman, off to college. Go!
The Anton Savage Show. This is News Talk.
53106 at a cost of 30 cent or 087-1400-106. Coming up after 11 o'clock, we are going to be talking to the former proprietor of Yukio. Former because it is one of the restaurants that has closed thanks to the pressure of rates and VAT. That's according to him. And we'll also be talking to Adrian Cummins, the head of the Restaurants Association, about the pressures on restaurants. Keith Barry will also be joining us before 12 o'clock. Before that, this is the end of the week of the Democrat National Convention. There is a certain mood evident in some of the analysis this weekend that says, in essence, one of the things that Joe Biden did was he appealed to the sort of Rust Belt, Middle America, blue collar, maybe might lean towards Trump voter, and he managed to woo them back to the party. And in the last week, what the party has achieved has been to tell them they are no longer welcome because the party is so committed to being way left of centre, at least in American terms. This is particularly the case in, is it the Sunday Times, Valerie, that you
Sunday
saw?
Times, yeah. There's a great piece in the Sunday Times. Kamala Long, not to be confused with Kamala Harris. I'm pronouncing this correctly. She's written this piece about the 5,000 delegates coming along. And she says, the look, she's talking about the look. And she said, it's convention loopy. Everyone around me is wearing Kamala outfits, pearls, skinny jeans, Converse, even the men. It's quite strange to talk to a 6 foot retired web designer called Chuck from Minnesota in pearls, or to see a male delegate from California sporting a straight up Queen Mother grade choker and Kamala makeup. So apparently this whole Kamala thing has taken over, and Joe Biden now is just a distant memory. He was there all right, but he's just a dream really. And all of these people are coming together, and terrifying extremes, she says. Also, there's a lot about the abortion debate. She says at parties, you are showered with morning after pills and condoms. It's reproductive rights forward in there. And a mile from the hall, there's a Planned Parenthood abortion lorry offering free vasectomies and medical abortions. And then she says, I guess after all the incredible fizzing energy, the non-stop videos, the playing of Beyoncé's Freedom, the dressing up and the endless sickening sound bites, a vote is a kind of prayer, Harris's speech was always going to be an anticlimax. So Harris actually only gets a tiny little postscript at the end of this article, but it's all about the atmosphere, and it's a fantastic piece actually. You would feel you are really there shouting for Kamala.
Can I just jump in for 2 seconds just to remind you though that when we talk about people wearing pearls and the outfits and everything, there were people wearing plasters on their ear.
Exactly.
That's there were right. people wearing plasters at the Donald Trump at the Republican National Convention. So, I mean, let's just remember that, you know, this
cosplaying goes on everywhere.
Sorry, Matt, you were going to say something.
No, that was actually the point I was going to make. That, you know, that the Republicans had all this thing. And in fact, there's an awful lot of pearl clutching going on now by the Republicans who give out about so-called being woke. I mean, sorry, for the Democratic Council, did anyone notice Tim Walz? So if this argument is that the Democrats are turning away from middle America, he may actually have been an absolutely inspired choice by the Democrats to actually to appeal. There he is, the old football coach, the army veteran, a very sensible, moderate individual. And the one thing that's really interesting at the moment, one of the criticisms
VP
that's
choices,
been made,
they do
more than you
do
say.
They? I mean, Kamala didn't do much when she was VP.
I think this is different.
And I think what's really interesting at present, a lot of the criticism that's been aimed at Kamala Harris is There was no policy in her speech. We don't know what our policies are. The vast majority of voters don't give a damn about other than headlines on policies. They don't want detailed speeches about policies. You've got 30 seconds.
No, Anton,
let me finish the point. Don't be doing an Ivan Yates at me and interrupting me the minute I'm trying to make a point in something in relation to this. It's all about vibes at the moment. This is the whole thing. And Trump is all about vibes, but Trump is all about negative vibes. Trump is all about talking down America, that everything is terrible and that only he can save it. Whereas on the other hand, what seems to be happening with the Democrats is they are coalescing amongst the left and the middle with a degree of positivity. So you have positivity versus negativity, which
now,
is the big issue in the US politics.
Matt, Donald Trump, when he campaigned, you may not like his policies. You may not believe his capacity to deliver on his policies. But what Donald Trump said to his electorate was, one, I'm going to do something significant about immigrants whom you hate. Two, I'm going to lift away the nanny state tendency to control everything from your dishwashers to your taps to the price of your gas to what you can drive to forcing you to have an electric vehicle. And three, I'm going to get the taxation as far out of your pocket as you can so you earn as much as is humanly possible.
That's only for the billionaires.
It doesn't matter. It's a policy platform.
Yeah,
it's a very evident policy
platform. Have you not noticed that Biden actually reduced the taxes for people on lower incomes? Kamala Harris is saying things about relation prices of food for people. She is hitting on issues that appealed to the voter who went to Trump in 2016. So this idea that, well, she's not getting into policy detail, but there are policies there in the same degree as Trump has been pushing forward his policies, which he didn't deliver on when he was president.
I think when you talk about the battle between policy and personality, the reality is that Donald Trump is such an enormous personality that Kamala Harris really needs to amp up and really become a personality. And, you know, we've talked about this before. I think that Kamala Harris, in some levels on an international scale, it was a somewhat unknown. You know, she's really sort of got a clean slate in terms of being able to build brand Kamala. I mean, even listening to some of the New York Times coverage this week, and they were talking to some of the delegates at the convention and saying, oh, and like, we didn't know that Kamala worked at McDonald's, and she really started and like clawed her way up from the bottom to become the person she is. And like, that really appealed to them. But I was kind of sitting there going, how did they not know this when they're all Democrats and she's been the vice president for the last couple of years?
So they're only getting,
they're only getting to know her now. Mm. And I think actually,
vice president.
But it's funny,
and
we
know that Donald Trump ate a lot of McDonald's.
he likes cheeseburger. But I mean, I just think that when we talk about personalities and the battle of policy versus personality, you know, Kamala has a chance now to really carve out sort of an identity and a reputation that can really rival Donald Trump. But I think the point that you make, Matt, about her vice president choice is crucial, because it's almost like a safety net for us, those blue collar voters, that this guy kind of looks a bit like us and he's going to be there too. So I just think it's going to be really interesting to see what way she shapes this. I would accept, though, that the honeymoon period is coming to an end now, and she's really going to have to, it's going to get,
although it's interesting on the honeymoon period that the poll of polls would suggest that it has been a good week for them, because I think she's now up
absolutely,
by about 3 or 4
points. They've had wall-to-wall coverage. If you watch CNN, it's been like weeks like this are always a total CNN
binge. Briefly, Matt, we have to talk
the television highlight of the year so far was the incredible debate between Donald Trump and Joe Biden, which did for Joe Biden. It was extraordinary. Yeah. I am so looking forward to the 10th of September when it's Kamala Harris against Donald Trump in debate. And here's my shameless plug. Isn't it great? That's overnight on the 10th of September. And Ivan and myself will have a chance in our Path to Power podcast live in the Olympia to talk about it all that evening.
You know, this
shameless.
Wasn't your first rodeo,
shameless.
Man. Dublin Airport should look after passengers and address the walking distance to gates. I agree with Valerie, says the text. Tourists are not the only people using airports. It would be interesting to see the data on what number of domestic tourists are from the regions who have to travel to Dublin. Shannon Knock are fab, but buses servicing them are not adequate, says a Galway tourist. Hi Anton, just texting in relation to phone use in schools. My daughter's school is unable to stop the use of vapes in the school. Phone doesn't seem an issue. I think they ignored for a quiet life for school management and protecting the school's reputation. They just don't care enough to sort it out. I said we had to talk dogs. The reason we have to talk dogs is because, Zara, the XL bully ban is on the way in. And one of the things that a lot of the dogs rehoming agencies are saying is that they have a huge problem, because if the dogs are held in a community setting, you can't bring in an XL bully because they're afraid for the other animals. And also now, because they are so restricted in who can own them, they're very difficult to rehome.
They absolutely are. And as I think from the outset to say that there are a lot of XL bully owners who will say that they're very gentle and that they have great relationships with those dogs. But the reality is that we've seen far too many incidents involving XL bullies now, the most recent one being this week with that 1-year-old child who was pulled from their mother's arms. you know, look, it's very challenging to try and rehome a dog like that. I mean, it does take someone who has a vast experience to be able to sort of handle this type of animal.
A lot of people say, Valerie, that the idea of banning the breed is a mistake, that it is the owner and that you can socialise a dog into any kind of misbehaviour, regardless of what breed that dog is.
No, that's been scientifically proven to be wrong, because these animals are naturally dangerous. It's built into them. And if we look at the sort of people who've owned them, even according to the papers today, you know, they were a status symbol for crime gangs who clipped their ears to make them look even more ferocious. And we can't have animals like that wandering around. I mean, I was on a beach one day with my dog on a lead, and an XL bully came over and attacked him. And luckily, his owners were able to grab him. He wasn't even on a lead. But, you know, the problem now is that as the date approaches when they're going to become illegal, people are abandoning them. And this is it's awfully dangerous, because they're just abandoning them in neighbourhoods. They're trying to hand them over to rescue services, who won't take them because they can't rehome them.
Although the problem is that I've heard Pete the Vet say a variant of this, that one of the issues is that you always have breeds that are seen as being big and dominant and aggressive. And if you ban XL bullies, it'll be Rhodesian Ridgebacks, it'll be Dobermans, it'll be Rottweilers, it'll be Alsatians, it'll be whatever else can just be the next breed.
Let's deal with one of them at a time. That's what we have to do. And this year we've seen a young woman killed. We've seen children injured. We've a little boy down in Wexford whose face has been disfigured. Mm. I mean, we can't let that go on. So, I mean, I think these dogs have to be taken in. Unfortunately, they have to be euthanized. And, you know, and that's the end of it. I mean, they're going to have to be neutered under the new regulations. So potentially in the future, that's going to stop them being born. We're not going to have any more of them. And if that works, that's really good. And then if there's another problem, at the moment it is XL bullies, but if it's another breed that are causing the same problems, then we're going to have to deal with that as well.
What do you make of that?
Can I just ask a question? Do you not think that maybe we need to actually have a conversation about responsible dog ownership as opposed to just an outright ban? You know, like, why wouldn't there be a conversation about possibly, you know, if you own an XL bully, you have to to drive a car, you have to have driving lessons and get a license. Then to own an XL bully, you have to go through maybe 6 dog training sessions or something, and it has to be signed off. Maybe there needs to be a broader conversation about responsible dog ownership.
Yeah.
You know, outright ban, clearly, as you say, is not the answer, in a sense that you have animals abandoned in neighbourhoods and unable to rehome them. Then maybe we should actually, as a country, be having a conversation about responsible dog ownership. Maybe we wouldn't have so many dogs being handed off to
the
FPCA.
But the people who want these dogs to be vicious, gangs and so on, they're not responsible dog owners anyway.
They're not going to go and get a licence,
no,
obviously.
And they're not going to go for a training course.
But also, likewise then, you know, I mean, we talk about the dog. Where's the dog warden? I mean, in all this, I mean, when do we ever see a dog warden? I mean, what are we getting dog licenses for then?
God,
if we don't have a dog warden,
we'll stride up to somebody walking an XL bully and say, "Can I have a word with you?"
I know, and I appreciate that. But then, like, you know, we should be training and paying people enough money to do a job like that.
If we're going to be fair to children, adults, everybody, I think we have to take these dogs out of circulation.
I can hear the text being typed as we speak, and undoubtedly, feel free to send them in 53106 or 087-1400-106, saying that there are lots of people who own pit bulls, there are lots of people who own Rottweilers, there are lots of people who own the Doggo Argentino, who are wonderful dog owners and who have trained the dogs to be gentle and well-behaved and all of the rest
Absolutely.
Of it. If you have a view, 53106, where we will finish it. Big story this weekend. Matt, delighted. You can see it in his face. And haven't seen this inside in years. Oasis are back together.
Oh, it's a blur man, you see.
Oh, no.
Oh, God. I mean, can we just get over Nolan, Liam Gallagher? I mean, I suppose they haven't made much particularly relevant music individually.
Because they've been separate, exactly.
Yeah, but then you can also say, was Oasis anything more than a sort of a quasi-Beatles tribute band?
Oh, God.
Oh, Matt.
Hot take.
This is
that is a hot take. I mean, you've said a lot of things this morning here, Matt, but that's a hot take.
It's only a rumour by the bosses in Glastonbury who want to see them back together. And the only, you know, thing that might make it be true is that the stumbling block between Liam and Noel, in the guise of Sarah MacDonald, that's Noel's former wife. Well, Sarah and Noel have divorced, so now the brothers can be friends.
Well, Liam is tweeting hints all the time, so we'll keep our fingers crossed. Valerie Cox, journalist and author, Zara King, Virgin Media news correspondent, Matt Cooper of The Last Word, and at the Olympia on Wednesday, the 11th of September, in the Cork Opera House on Friday, the 13th of September. Thank you very much. I shouldn't borrow teeth. We'll be back after this break.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
DR Power Equipment is the industry leader in field and brush mowers. Their full line of machines are designed to clear acres of tough weeds, woody brush, and saplings up to 3 inches thick, hour after hour, year after year. Just one mow, and you'll agree nothing stops a DR. Visit drpower.com to learn more and shop the sale today.